Hi everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comics, manga, graphic literature podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today is Andrew.
That's me.
Yes. So how is you, Andrew?
I am good. It's been a long week, but it is the weekend now.
Word on the vine is you're all curried up.
I am full of the good sauce. I'm actually like one in a bit curried up.
One in a bit, you just couldn't stop.
Well, the curry number one was not a good curry. It was bad curry.
Okay, with it being curry, that could mean one of two things. It was either too hot or it tasted awful.
I mean, awful would have been something. It was more a ill-advised attempt to make a diet curry, which is in fact just a plate of mush.
Yeah, I was going to say diet. There's no such thing as a diet curry. It's something that people have attempted. I know people have attempted to make a diet curry, and I take one look at it and go, nah, it's just a stew with a bit of spice in it. That's all it is. It's not a curry.
That being said, does make the forbidden fruit of the naughty curry all that more delicious.
Oh, God, yes. When you're on a diet, a curry is something that... Well, the thing is, you could justify a curry on a diet as long as you don't count the calories because it's got the spices and the herbs and, you know...
You can justify a lot of things on a diet if you just don't count the calories.
This is true. I realized just how stupid that was when I was saying it.
That's the secret. Just never admit how bad something is for you.
Yes. So, speaking of things that are bad for us, video games.
Yes, that works as a segue. Today, we are going to be talking video games, specifically video games based on comics.
And vice versa.
Comics based on video games.
Yeah, vice versa.
Or vice versa. That's a much easier way of saying it.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking, he's taking too long to say this.
I am. It's too many words. There's a recession on, goddammit, we need to cut down. But yes, as a lot of people listening have probably suspected, we are talking about this as a thinly veiled attempt for me to go, the new Spider-Man game is freaking incredible.
Which I wouldn't know since I haven't played it yet.
No, you haven't.
Damn you, Sony.
Fine, you'll get your turn when I'm finished rubbing it all over my body.
Yeah. But, I haven't played it. I played a demo of it. I haven't played the full game yet. And the demo was kind of amazing.
Amazing and spectacular.
Actually, I'd say it was closer to superior.
Oh, yeah. It was a real web of Spider-Man.
Well, it seemed to cast its web through all the other Spider-Man games and just pull all the good bits from the other Spider-Man games and, you know, connect them all together and it's, you know, and weave its own tangled, beautiful, you know, singular thing. It was actually a lot of fun swinging through the city.
Yeah, that's, 'cause I think that is the thing that above all else the game is just absolutely nailed. It's just web swinging feels great.
Yeah. Do you know,
like, I think that they've automated the process enough that you're not just like flinging yourself around the city with no idea what you're doing.
Yeah.
But you still have enough control that it feels like you are the one doing the web swinging.
The weird thing is, you know, from all the other Spider-Man games, because there's been quite a few, and I'm not talking about the side-scroller ones on the Mega Drive and that, but if you go back to the PlayStation 1, there was the old PS1 Spider-Man games, right? And the web-swinging in that was all right for the PlayStation 1. You know, you can't expect much for the PlayStation 1 these days, can you? And then you went on to PlayStation...
It tried, though.
Yeah, it tried. Then you went on to the PlayStation 2, and that was around the same time as the Sam Raimi trilogy. So you had those movie tie-ins, but then you had this little odd Spider-Man game sitting off to the side, Ultimate Spider-Man. And I've got to say, the web swinging in the new Spider-Man game reminds me a lot more of the web swinging in Ultimate Spider-Man than it does just about any of the other Spider-Man games.
Yeah, see, I think my problem was I had the DS version of Ultimate Spider-Man.
That was
just far more fiddly because of the DS had an absolutely horrific button layout.
Yeah, not only that, the DS version of Ultimate Spider-Man was particularly awful.
I don't think it was awful, it was just, yeah, it was quite trimmed down.
Yeah, they cut out a lot of stuff. But, I mean, it was basically an open-world Spider-Man game. And you could play as, you know, there were sections where you played as Spider-Man, sections where you played as Venom. And my nephew adored it. It was the only Spider-Man game in the that was allowed in the house, and he'd sit there for hours just swinging around the city, rescuing people who'd fallen off, you know, who'd fallen off ledges and were hanging on for dear life, going, help!
That sounds good.
There were a lot of them for some reason. You know, health and safety standards in Manhattan weren't very good. But you were talking about the new game.
Yes, the new game. So, like I say, the web swinging is fantastic. And I think it helps, because it manages to make it possibly the first open world game I've played where they've actually gone, or at least played in a long, long time, where they've gone, hey, what if getting across the map was actually fun?
Oh.
And not just an annoying trudge to, like, artificially inflate the game length.
Yeah. See, that's always been my problem with Fetch Quest. You know, they say, oh, go over here and do this. Go over here and get this. You're like, I hate hiking uphill and down dale.
Yeah, or in the Assassin's Creed sense, the awkwardly running onto the corners of buildings and kind of scrabbling at the wall like a frightened mouse.
Yeah, and I mean,
you were like a millimeter off, so the climbing detection didn't work.
Yeah. Do you know how much of a revolution it was for video games when you could start with a horse? You could start the game having your own horse. You didn't have to work your way up to having a horse in the game. Looking at certain titles in particular, Dragon Age.
God, the things you have to get excited about in open world games.
Yeah.
Spider-Man's like backflipping over skyscrapers and doing somersaults in the air.
And that's the thing, you know? Spider-Man can just zip across the city and have fun. And I'm still waiting for my horse.
Standing in line at the horse queue, annoyingly like tapping your watch. God, when is this horse going to get here?
Then that posh git keeps turning up going, look at my horse. My horse is amazing.
Oh, that's, wow. That is like meme archaeology.
No. Sorry, I couldn't resist. It fit.
Yeah, that's good. It's basically, I think probably the Spider-Man 2 game on PS2.
Yeah.
That's probably like one of the best comparisons for the web swinging.
Yeah.
Imagine that, but then mixed with, I was going to say, Arkham Asylum style combat, but possibly Arkham Asylum, but even better.
So Arkham City?
Well, I mean, just in general, that series, it kind of put that build off the idea of, you know, having some kind of early warning system that lets you dodge, but also turning it into this like amazingly frantic experience.
Well, that's the thing.
Like, you're always doing flips over guys and webbing one of them to the wall, and you spin around, punching another guy in the face. Oh, a guy's got a rocket launcher, and then you dodge it. That's when everything goes slow motion. It's like the rocket explodes behind you, so then you hit him with your webs and you drag yourself over to him and punch him in the face.
See, this is one of the things that always puzzled me, and I never understood, and I'm glad they're really doing it now, but you know quick time events, you know, where everything slows down, you have to press a button and you do a certain move. I've never understood why they never used quick time events in a Spider-Man game, or why they didn't use bullet time in a Spider-Man game to kind of play on the whole Spider-Sense aspect. So you'd basically, you know, it go to a quick time event and you basically push it in a certain direction to dodge in that direction. Then everything slows down into like bullet time and you get to do all of these actions because you're supposed to be like really agile and ridiculously fast with your hand movements, aren't you?
Yeah. So I think this is the first game that really captures that well.
Yeah.
Definitely not. Because the last Spider-Man game I played was The Amazing Spider-Man 2 on PS3.
Ooh.
Which decided first-person Spider-Man would be really fun. Oh no, oh dear God, all the motion sickness.
Yeah. See, the last Spider-Man I played was Web of Shadows, The Amazing Allies Edition. I didn't even bother with The Amazing Spider-Man games. I looked at them. Oh, sorry, I tell a lie. No, I played Edge of Time.
Yeah, I think that's one of the many, many kind of all right Spider-Man games.
Yeah, that's the thing with Spider-Man games. They've always been just, they've kind of hit that level of kind of all right and then never gone any better than that, have they? Until now?
Until now. I think also a big point of that is that this game, it also has a really good storyline.
Okay.
Like, it's not just, oh, I don't know, there's Mysterio and he's going to do the bad thing, so we gotta punch him a lot. It's like it actually basically built off sort of, but not really, but also kind of as a sequel to Spider-Man Homecoming. So it's as if something like that has happened and now it's about like 8 years later.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man, you know, he's in his early 20s. he's been Spider-Maning for a while, and it just it manages to weave in lots of like kind of the best bits of various Spider-Man continuities.
Yeah.
So you've got cool stuff like he's working as a partner to Otto Octavius.
All right.
And obviously, you know, at some point he's going to become Doc Ock.
Yeah.
But the game actually takes time to like build up their relationship. Like, so it actually makes you care when this inevitable downfall is going to happen.
All right.
And like, there's loads of stuff about Peter doing volunteer work at the Feast Center, which is kind of a massive homeless shelter.
Okay.
And it actually goes into these themes of, you know, responsibility and what does that actually mean for Peter Parker? Like, should he keep on being Spider-Man and helping people? Or should he give it all up and concentrate on things like his science and helping the homeless? Because those are the things that's actually going to help people.
That's actually a very good plot point. That's something that hasn't really been touched on in the other games, because the other games have been straight up punch-ups for the most part.
Yeah, exactly. And this, actually, I think kind of the comparison to the Arkham games is a good one here.
Yeah.
Because it's working in the similar sense to say, hey, this is not just a game. This is like a whole continuity that we are going to build.
Yeah.
Like this entire universe for Spider-Man things to happen in.
Yeah. I like it. I like it a lot.
Also, you can take selfies, which is awesome.
Yeah, but it's Spider-Man. Do you know what I really like, though? I like the fact that this Spider-Man game, from what I played of it, the demo I played of it, I like the fact that it was a lot more like Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah, that is clearly a huge influence on the game.
Yeah.
Which is great, because that is one of the best versions of Spider-Man.
And I do think, Tom Holland is an inspired choice to be Spider-Man now.
It really is. Although it is kind of weird playing as sort of Tom Holland, but not quite Peter Parker.
Yeah. He's basically playing himself, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, that's the best type of role where you don't actually have to act, you just be yourself.
No, but I mean, like, in the game, where you can tell, like, their model for Peter Parker is very obviously based on Tom Holland.
Oh, right. See, I didn't play that bit. I didn't see the unmasked Spider-Man in the demo I played. So I'm going to have to look this up.
It's like if Tom Holland and Andrew Garfield stepped into, like, Seth Brundle's machine from The Fly.
There's several things wrong with that.
But he's still a good, nice boy.
Good, good. Anyway, shall we leave Spider-Man to one side? Because we mentioned Spider-Man, we mentioned Arkham. Obviously, there are other games based on comic books. There's even a Hellboy game.
Oh, man, I completely forgot that. Yeah, that was like years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, I've got it on PC. I've got the big box version as well. There's even a Hellboy game. And it's not just the comic books that you know that inspired video games. There are loads of these cult comic books from across the world, and especially across the continent, that got their own video games.
I remember when I was younger playing 13.
Yeah.
Which I think is based on like some random French comic book.
Exactly. And it was a cracking game. You know, I love the aesthetic of it as well, where it was just trying to be a comic book as a video game. But
That was like one of the first cel-shaded games, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. I mean, the best, you know, some of the best games before the, you know, if you go back to the PlayStation 2, some of the best games that we played, superhero tie-in games that we played, were things like X-Men Legends 1 and 2.
I never played those, but I did play the Marvel Ultimate Alliance games, which were basically the same thing.
They were basically the same thing. The X-Men Legends games and the Marvel Ultimate Alliance games were they were really good for what they were. And you had this...
Actually, I think there was DC Legends, which was a DC one as well.
I think it was DC Heroes. But it wasn't...
Actually, DC Legends might be something else.
Yeah, I think it was DC Heroes. And you also had the Teen Titans game, which was based on the good Teen Titans cartoon. And my nephew and niece absolutely adored that game. I've got it kicking around the house here somewhere. But that game was... It followed the cartoon really well. And it actually... I think it had the actual voice actors from the cartoon voicing the roles in the game.
Nice.
Yeah, and all of these games... The weird thing is, all of these games, in terms of the game mechanics, they were exactly the same game. But in terms of the actual characters, in terms of the story, they were very, very different.
Yeah, because for kind of a wide range of heroes, that seems like the smartest way to do it, to say, you know, here's a wide roster of heroes. You can pick like one or maybe a few to make a team of.
Yeah.
And they all have their own abilities. It's kind of weird that that's dropped off, because that's basically what like League of Legends is, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, these were a precursor to the whole MOBA thing. And what I mean,
there's a reason they're called hero games.
Yeah, but I mean, what I don't understand is, with Infinity War, for example, you could easily make a game that had that massive roster of Marvel characters and call it Infinity War, where you had the Avengers and the Guardians of the Galaxy and Doctor Strange going off on a wild adventure to stop Thanos.
Yeah, so, I mean, just in general, it seems weird that there's been barely any superhero games, like, since the MCU has been a thing.
Well, there's been barely any superhero ensemble games, I'd say, where you had multiple heroes from different franchises coming in, and the last one we had was Ultimate Alliance. And
even after that, there was what we had, like, the Arkham games. I think we had a couple of times we had, like, a Captain America and Thor tie-in games for the first movies. And then I guess kind of a few fighting games.
Yeah, but I mean, I think what Marvel have done, they've focused more on the mobile games, because you've got Contest of Champions and various things like that, haven't you?
Yes, but it seems weird that they haven't tried to focus on the more like console and PC markets.
Yeah, but I think with the console and PC market, you know, you've got to make a game that will sell. Spider-Man, they've had various bites at that cherry, and as we said, it's always been kind of okay. Now they've basically got their Batman Arkham Asylum moment, because Rocksteady did an amazing job with Arkham Asylum, and it was the first time you actually felt like you were playing Batman properly in a game.
Yeah, I guess maybe that's it. There's just been so many not super successful superhero games.
Yeah, and there's also all the Lego games, Lego Marvel Superheroes.
Oh my god, yeah, we forgot about the Lego games.
There's the Lego Marvel Superheroes, Lego Avengers. It was Justice League Heroes, that was it. Not DC Heroes, sorry.
Yeah, that was it.
Lego Avengers, Lego Batman, and various others. So, you know, we have had some superhero ensemble games, kind of, I'd say. And then there's the Marvel versus Capcom games as well. You know, the fighting games.
Yeah, which I can't talk much about, because I am atrocious at fighting games.
Yeah. The weird thing is, it kind of goes the other way, though, because we've now started seeing games like Mass Effect and Halo and Dragon Age and various others. They're now getting graphic novels.
Yeah, we're definitely in the age of the tie-in comic.
And it's really... See, the thing is, I like the Dragon Age graphic novels, because Dragon Age is set in a fantasy world, and it's very easy to do a story set in a fantasy world, especially with something like Dragon Age, because BioWare really did a good job with the story. Same kind of with Mass Effect, I suppose, where it, you know, you could get away with doing various stories set in the science fiction world of Mass Effect.
Yeah, I think that is the key to the game, is that you need a world big enough where these side stories can take place.
Yeah, or a world where the main story, you know, it ended, but it ended with the idea that, you know, everything continued. It didn't just stop there. You knew that the universe was continuing, the world was continuing, people were still living their lives, you know, fighting their wars, whatever they were going to do. So you could still tell stories within that universe, within that world.
Yeah, basically I think it needs to feel like the story you're telling actually matters.
Yeah. Or you need to tie it in with certain events that happen. If it's going to be set during the time of the games, it needs to tie in with certain events that happen during the game, and you need to plan it properly so that if you're playing the game, you can say, oh, so that's where that character went. Do you see what I mean?
And I think we've been dancing around it, but I'm just going to go straight in and say, objectively, the best example of this is the Injustice comics.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Because that was basically Warner Brothers saying, hey, Tom Taylor, we've made like this fun fighting game about bad guy Superman. Build an entire world out of that. And he did.
Yeah, and I mean, if you've played Injustice 2, haven't you?
I actually haven't, no.
You haven't?
I love the comics, but I've played neither of the games.
Tell you what then, because I think we've got Injustice 2 on disc, right? I'll trade you. When you finish with Amazing Spider-Man, I'll borrow your Amazing Spider-Man and I'll lend you Injustice 2. All right.
Nice. I look forward to awkwardly bumbling my way through the campaign.
Oh, I've played through. The bad ending for Batman is, it's bad.
I suspect what the bad ending for Batman is going to be is getting to, like, the halfway point and having a fight where they actually expect you to use skills like blocking, which I can't do. I'm bad at timing. And just getting my face mushed in by Brainiac.
Yeah. The bad ending for Batman is just kind of, ouch. Ooh, Kara, I feel sorry for you.
How do you combos?
Button mash. Never underestimate the power of button mashing, right? When I was at university last, and this was about 15 years ago, 16 years ago, and one evening they had a Tekken tournament on. Tekken 3 it was, and the winner won a copy of the game, right? And the winner was my housemate, named Kieran, and all he did was button mash all his way through. He was fighting a guy who took the game so seriously. He was doing like all sorts of combos, stuff like that, and Kieran was just standing there, just hitting the same buttons repeatedly.
To be fair, that does remind me of like when I was playing one of the Dead or Alive games with some friends, and I was playing with one character who could do a split kick, and I just kept doing that over and over and over and over.
Yep.
See, and they hated me.
Yeah.
They hated me so much.
See, this is the reason why, you know, if you're playing Tekken with somebody who's a complete novice, you never let them choose Eddie or whoever it is who does all the capoeira stuff, because they'll kill you just by mashing buttons. That character is designed just for button mashing.
Well, I suppose that is a character who can literally just spin around on the ground and do attacks.
Yep, that's him. You know, the one.
It kind of makes me sad because when I was younger, I had like the Game Boy Advance version Tekken 3, and I actually had the time to, you know, train and actually get good at the game.
And how often were you beaten by somebody just button mashing?
I've actually played multiplayer. It was just me and Yoshimitsu mashing our way through the single player.
Stabbing yourself to hit someone behind you. Never understood that move. But
I like his attack called the Flea. We can like plant his sword in the ground and then someone like hops up on the end and then jumps around.
Oh yeah, that one. That one's bizarre.
He's such a weird dude.
He is.
Back to superhero games.
Well, not just superhero games, comic book adaptations of video games.
But I just think of superheroes. Because I think one of the interesting challenges, especially with solo superheroes, is trying to work out actually how to fit their powers in.
Yeah.
Because it feels... I feel like that's why characters like Batman and Spider-Man are kind of a natural fit for these things. Because you can give them, like, just kung fu fighting.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, build a game around that. But what do you do with Superman?
Well, you know, one of the most bizarre adaptations that I've seen...
No, I don't say your words.
Sonic the Hedgehog. Every year, Free Comic Book Day, there's a Sonic the Hedgehog comic, isn't there?
Yep.
Without fail.
Yep, that's also not at all what I was talking about.
Sorry, it just suddenly popped in my head. Anyway, please continue.
So, what I just meant is I feel like it's interesting to see and sort of think about how much of a challenge a character like Superman is. Because obviously, Superman doesn't really do combos. He just punches things and they go flying off into the sun.
That's the thing that I never really understood with the Injustice game. If I'm playing as Batman, if I'm playing as Superman and I'm fighting Batman and I'm...
Yeah, how does Superman just not immediately break his skull?
Well, Superman wouldn't just break his skull. He'd punch his skeleton out of his body, wouldn't he?
Yeah, well, I feel like that kind of thing, you can kind of just say, yeah, it's suspension of disbelief. But it's trying to actually do all of Superman's stuff because, like, he can't really be super strong. He can't fly that fast because otherwise you would need a ridiculously huge map.
Yeah.
And what you end up with is like Superman 64, where you just are pushing a giant floating brick around a maze.
Oh, and you're flying in, when you turn corners, you have to open your legs and then close your legs.
Yeah.
Oh, someone thought flying and swimming were the same thing. Oh. Yeah, I totally get what you mean with Superman. It doesn't work. I mean, there are a lot of characters that you couldn't really see being adapted. But the thing about the Injustice comics, though, they took a basic idea and they made this amazing world out of it, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. They built what is actually my favorite DC continuity.
Yeah, and I don't know why more people aren't, you know, weren't invested in the Injustice comics, because they were, yeah, okay, there was some deviations from the actual video games, but not that many, and for a lot of it, it filled in a lot of the gaps from the game.
Yeah, I think, because that is just an incredible model of Warner Brothers saying, okay, here's like what we've got planned for the game, these are the details we need, but then also just saying, beyond that, you're free to do whatever you want.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I reviewed a comic book adaptation quite recently, Rogue Trooper.
Oh, it's a Rogue Trooper video game.
Yeah, there was a Rogue Trooper video game that was released on the PS2, and they basically did a remastering of it and re-released it.
Oh, okay, that's what... Because, yeah, I remember the game, but I thought, didn't that come out years and years ago? But, okay, they remastered that.
Yeah. So I reviewed that a while ago. I think I did a video for it as well. It should be on YouTube somewhere. Rogue Trooper, I think there's a... Isn't there a Dread video game kind of in, like, early concept stage because of the success of the movie Dread?
I mean, I would say no, because I don't think that movie was successful at all, Rob.
Well, it wasn't successful per se. I think it was the best Judge Dredd movie out of the two we've had.
Oh, yeah. It was great. I just don't think it made an awful lot of money.
No, but they do want to make make another one, don't they?
Yes, which please do.
Yes. Even though it was most definitely The Raid.
Yes, it was. But, I mean, more movies should be The Raid, because The Raid is incredible.
Yeah. I didn't, you know, it was definitely The Raid. But I wasn't complaining. You didn't see me going, oh, this is just The Raid, I'm going to turn this off. What I actually thought was, this is just The Raid, that's fantastic. It's Judge Dredd crossed with The Raid, nothing wrong with this picture.
Yeah, it's two things I love a lot that work very well together.
Yes.
Speaking of, yeah, I think a Judge Dredd game would work really well. That is a character that works there.
I think that it's time to revisit some of these characters as well. Some of these characters that possibly we haven't looked at for a while. Judge Dredd, I definitely think it's time for a new Judge Dredd game.
Yeah, because I mean that would, like, obviously you can do open world. You can just like go around places solving crimes. You know, you can have like random stuff going on where you need to step in and just blast away some perps.
See, do you know what? I'd love to see the Judge Dredd game if they made a Judge Dredd game. I'd love to see it as, say, a Grand Theft Auto type game, because at the end of the day, he's the law, isn't he?
Yeah, that's a fun twist, where you could just steal people's cars and just go, I'm a judge, I need this vehicle.
Yeah, and that's why I'm thinking a Grand Theft Auto type game would fit with Judge Dredd, wouldn't it? Where on the streets, you could basically shoot somebody who was a criminal, you could get them out of the way. If there's collateral damage, you could say, report it to these authorities. They'll sort you out. But at the end of the day, you're a judge.
That being said, I feel like maybe not in the current political climate.
Yeah.
I feel like I and lots of people maybe don't want to play as a lawman who can gun down people without any kind of consequence.
Ah, yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, there is that.
Maybe say, no, it's okay, they had marijuana in their apartment.
Even if you dress it up with the Judge Dredd moniker, it's still not a good thing, is it? What about Deadpool? Do you reckon Deadpool needs a new video game? Because the last one was just kind of okay, wasn't it?
See, I liked the last one. I think that's the thing that especially comic book games can get away with, is being sort of just okay mechanically.
Yeah.
But then, like, shoving in enough, like, references and cool things that I'll still have fun with it.
Okay, okay.
But, I mean, I think that's basically, like, what Marvel Ultimate Alliance did, where it's like...
Yeah.
That setup is a very simple setup, but then it's also like, oh, but here's Asgard, and like, here's Sif and the Warriors Three, and Ymir the Frost Giant, and Loki, and the Enchantress and Executioner, and like, just tons of Easter eggs and references.
Yeah.
And that's cool, I will enjoy that.
Yeah, I suppose that works. Fantastic Four, do you reckon the... Well, do you know, weirdly enough, because the Fantastic Four format would actually work really well if you adopted the kind of Ultimate Alliance Justice League Heroes
I mean, yeah, they will, because the Fantastic Four were in Ultimate Alliance and they were rad to play as.
Well, just having like the Fantastic Four as a unit.
Yeah, where you can just like kind of swap between the characters. Yeah, I think that works.
You know, kind of a slightly off top down, just the 4-man team that you had in Ultimate Alliance, but you could only have the Fantastic Four, and you know, have like do it like a Kingdom Hearts style, so you could have different scenarios where you could replace one of the members with somebody who was part of the Fantastic Four in a, you know, in comic book history. So you could have like Medusa or She-Hulk or somebody like that. Do you see what I mean?
But then it's actually Ex-Hulk, Shrix, She-Hulk's Heartless, Nobody, something Kingdom Hearts story. I tried to understand it, but then there was lots of bleeding of the eyes and screaming.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going there.
That being said, you know, we could just have all the Marvel heroes in Kingdom Hearts now.
This is true. Do you know who would be difficult to do a video game of?
The Flash.
Yes, you read my mind.
Because actually, I did have a thought that I could kind of see maybe like a Justice League game where you maybe play as like, say, Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Because I think especially, say, like Wonder Woman based on the movie, that's some good combat stuff. But also maybe you have sections where you can play as other characters.
Yeah.
So like The Flash, but they're very specifically like races. Because I feel like that's the only context where The Flash really works.
Yeah, I mean, I could only see The Flash as kind of a maybe an over-the-shoulder thing, but I think Flash fits more the racing game format where you basically have to go from A to B really quick, and then when you get there, it switches to a combat thing. But the whole point is getting from A to B as fast as possible.
Yeah, and I feel like you can't really make it an open-world game or a platformer game because see every single 3D Sonic the Hedgehog game.
Well, not every single one. The first two 3D Sonic the Hedgehog games. Lots of them, yeah. But the first two were... The first one was all right. The second one was much better. The, you know, Sonic Adventure 2. But unfortunately, it didn't really do too well. But anyway, yeah. It's weird because I'm just going through a list of comic books, you know, video games based on comic books. But I've also found a list of manga based on video games.
Oh, yeah. It's like, pretty sure that there's Legend of Zelda manga, isn't there?
There's a Legend of Zelda manga. There are Final Fantasy manga. There's several Tales mangas. Manga. There's Tears to Tiara manga. It's a lot of this is mainly JRPGs, I'll be honest. A lot of the manga adaptations...
I mean, makes sense.
Yeah, they tend to be JRPGs, and the thing that always confused me about the manga adaptations of JRPGs was that you play the RPG for the story. So if you've read the manga, then what's the point of you playing the game?
Yeah, that does seem weird.
And that's... I'm forever hoping that, you know, Western comic book adaptations of video games don't go down the same route. If they ever do a comic book adaptation of The Witcher, which really they should, let's be fair. It's getting a TV series. Why shouldn't it have a comic book adaptation?
But even then, like, to be fair, part of me also thinks, hey, it's a chance to, like, get into The Witcher without having to spend 9 kajillion hours playing the game.
Yeah.
Because I don't have a kajillion hours, Rob.
Yeah, this is true. Do you know, that's just reminded me. There's an elephant in the room that I think everyone's forgotten about.
Is it the 1990s Batman Forever Game Boy game?
No.
Oh, was the first comic book game I played. I guess superhero game.
It's a title that started off as a comic book and then became a cartoon and a video game and then became a comic book again. After it became a cartoon and a video game, and then a cartoon repeatedly.
Oh, this is some Street Fighter the movie, the video game level nonsense.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because that started off originally as a comic book, didn't it?
Yeah, that was a comic, which is always weird. I always forget that it was technically a comic. Well, probably a comic, which is sort of unofficially a Daredevil spin-off.
Yeah.
Because the radioactive waste that turns the turtles into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is the same waste that hit Matt Murdock and gave him his senses.
Yeah, Because, what was it?
How come Matt Murdock isn't a Teenage Mutant Ninja? Like, how come he didn't just grow into an even more humanoid human?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. But, you know, before there was the video game, before there was the original cartoon of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, there was the comic book, which, it wasn't a great comic book. I read a couple of issues of it years and years ago, and I wasn't too impressed, but it's had a lot just from those small roots, hasn't it? And the comic came out in 1984.
Yeah, I thought that makes sense, because I know that at least some of their games have been very bad.
Yes, some of them have been very, very bad.
Because initially they were the superhero game.
Yeah.
Which is just a side-scrolling beat-em-up with horrible collision detection.
Yep.
Like just really awkward punching animations.
Yeah. I'll tell you, actually, speaking of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I've just remembered another game based on a comic book, based on a graphic novel series or a comic book series. You remember The Wolf Among Us? Based on
Fables. Oh, yeah, that got a Telltale game.
Yeah, because the Telltale game format would work for certain types of superhero, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's already a Batman Telltale.
There's a Batman Telltale. I'd love to see a Question Telltale game.
That would be cool. There's absolutely no chance because the audience would be basically us too. But...
Yeah, but, you know, Telltale, if you're listening, we would like a Question, you know, adventure game. We think it'd be amazing. And,
Or just like a question segment in something.
Or a question segment in something.
Because, yeah, I think that's probably a good point to end on.
Yeah.
Which is, I think we've hit the nail on the head of what the big issues with superhero and comic book games are. Are they, obviously, there's a whole different range of properties to base off of.
Yeah.
But that kind of runs counterintuitive to a lot of the big video game companies' ideas of, okay, this specific game type works. Everything will be this game type.
Not just that. I mean, you've got to look at video game players as well, or fans, as they call themselves, which you know, some of the communities are very, very toxic. And what they look at, they'll look at a game based on, they won't look at a game based on how good it is. Say you've got a new Batman game coming out, right? They won't look at the game initially based on whether it's a good Batman game or even whether it's a good video game. What they'll do first is say, okay, you know, does this, if they're Batman fans, they'll say, does this denigrate Batman in any way, and judge it based on that first.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but that's okay, because it's time for what we've been reading.
Yes. So, Andrew, what have you been reading?
I've been reading a fun boxer. Rob said he would go first, and now he's lied to me. But that's okay. But Halo, Rise of Atriox.
Okay.
Because, to be fair, I guess this is pertinent to what we've been talking about.
Yes.
In that this is a tie-in comic for the game Halo Wars 2, and this kind of chronicles the sort of the origin story for that game's villain, Atriox, and just I kind of like what they've done.
Yeah.
With the idea that there's like this overarching narrative of someone trying to put together sort of a file on Atriox, and so accessing kind of all these references and archived footage to piece it all together.
Mm.
And I like that we're like setting up these sort of four different stories by a bunch of different creators. So what we have on scripts are Cullen Bunn, Jody Hauser, Alex Irvine, and John Jackson Miller.
Yeah.
And art by Josan Gonzalez, Eric Nguyen, Hayden Sherman, and Jonathan Wayshack. And so this tells the story of Atriox, who is a brute, which is one of the alien races from the Covenant, who are the big Halo bad guys, who also have the funny running around grunt guys and the scary elite dudes with the laser swords.
Yeah.
I've played half of Halo 1. That's my Halo knowledge. So Atriox, he is a brute, and his species is basically used as cannon fodder. They're big, they're strong, they have massive hammers. They basically are sent in a huge wave at the enemy, so break through their lines.
Yeah.
But Atriox, he doesn't like this because, you know, countless numbers of his people get slaughtered in every single battle. So he sort of organizes an uprising.
Yeah.
And it's just, the four stories kind of skip across time so he seems to kind of decide to organize enough rising, become basically like alien Spartacus, and then gather together an army.
Okay, so do they stand up at some point and go, I am Spartacus?
That'd be silly, Rob. They're aliens. You've taken this very serious concept and you made it ludicrous, and I won't stand for that.
Says the man who's played half of Halo.
Yeah. Don't you be coming here and talking about my beloved Halo. I have also played quite a bit of the multiplayer, and I played Halo 2 multiplayer. So there, I know all about the Halos.
Okay, so what is Halo?
It's the ring around a planet. The aliens won, I think, because maybe it was like an ancient civilization built it. Master Chief, aka Mr. John Halo himself, he's got to stop the aliens, and he's got a gun that shoots purple spiky things, but it's a bit rubbish. So if I were you, I would just use the pistol. Pistol's the best weapon anyway. Or the sniper rifle.
Okay.
You can play Capture the Flag.
Is that a chapter in this graphic novel?
No, at no points, no flags are captured. 0 out of 10. That's the end of my TED talk. But no, it's reading this as a non-Halo fan, it's just kind of, it's very obviously you are meant to buy the game and then go, this Atriox guy seems cool. I wonder what his deal is. Oh, look, here's a fun comic book that explains it.
Mm.
But I think it's just very much, I mean, it's basically an entire comic of setting things up for a different thing.
Yeah.
And I think there's just not really much to be gained out of it if you're not going to play Halo Wars 2.
Okay, so not worth it unless you're going to play Halo Wars 2.
One time I was in the backseat of a Rocket Warthog and I fired a rocket at one of the tanks and it hit the bottom of the tank and it flipped over and fell off a bridge. That was fun. But actually then we drove off the bridge by accident. That's okay. That's everything about Halo. There's nothing else. That's the entirety of Halo. That's all there is.
There is no Master Chief. He's
told you his name is John Halo.
Yes, John Halo. John Q. Halo.
The third.
So my turn, is it?
Yep, your turn.
Right, I am going to go with Rise of the Black Panther by Ta-Nehisi Coates. And it's got art by... Paul Renault and Javier Pina. And, with Edgar Salazar and Keith Champagne as well. Now, this
That's a fancy name.
Yeah, no, Keith Champagne just doesn't quite work.
It's also weirdly like, yeah, it's an oxymoron pretty much, isn't it?
Or just said, my name's Champagne. Ooh, Keith Champagne. Oh.
It should be like Ollivander Champagne.
Yeah. Yes. Or, you know, just something exotic and foreign. No, Keith. So, anyway, this collects the first 6 issues of Rise of the Black Panther by Ta-Nehisi Coates, and you've got people saying things like this comic more than earns its place in the, you know, in the Black Panther mythos, and I agree. There is a lot to it. It's, you know, there's a lot of stuff to take in over the course of the 6 issues. But my main problem with it, the artwork's fine. The storylines are fine. Everything's fine. It's just too much of a snapshot. Does that make sense? You know, it goes through his meeting with Captain America. It goes through the death of T'Chaka. It goes through his first meeting with Namor. It goes through him meeting Doombot, who's sitting on his throne. Yada yada yada.
Okay, it kind of comes across like a primer for Black Panther.
Yeah, it's like Cliff Notes for Black Panther. More than anything else, you know? When he meets Bucky, when Bucky's the Winter Soldier and trying to kill him, when he goes up against, when him and the White Wolf have falling out, all sorts of things like that. That's all part of this, and it just feels rushed, you know? It feels like there's a lot more story there than you're actually getting in this trade paperback. And I know there's a lot more story there because I've read a lot of Black Panther in the past.
Actually, you know, this sounds like that. I think maybe sums it up well.
Yeah.
This is the Black Panther tutorial mode.
Yes, it is. It is absolutely the Black Panther tutorial mode. You know, with controls showing you how to do certain things, how to do certain combos. You know, I still don't know what Imperious Rex means or why Namor keeps shouting it whenever he kicks a door in or punches somebody, which he does in this.
But the man wears fish scale speedos. I don't think I can explain any part of his logic.
Well, that was then. This is now. The modern Namor doesn't wear fish scale speedos. He wears long johns. They're thermally insulated to protect from the cold of the deep, deep sea.
He needs to protect all his little swimmers.
Well, see, the thing is, you know, Aquaman, we decided Aquaman had those thermal long johns. I think he got jealous. I think Namor got jealous of Aquaman's thermal long johns and went and got his own.
Well, they were hanging out at the same pool party, and Namor was just eyeing him jealously.
Because
his undercrackers weren't the only thing that was green.
Namor's just looking at Aquaman, Aquaman's just going, what? Namor goes, where'd you get those from? The weird thing is, because Namor's got the long johns on now, right? He's got this kind of waistcoaty thing as well, which is open all the way down to, like, his navel.
Oh, of course, Rob. Haven't you heard? Abslantis will not be denied.
But the thing is, he looks like some kind of 70s porn actor in certain panels.
I mean, when doesn't he, Rob, really?
Or he looks like he's in, you know, he's about to go for a title fight in some wrestling ring.
But where does he get the speedos from?
I don't know.
Does he make them?
He might order them from Amazon. Apparently they deliver everywhere now.
What if it's like an Etsy store? Next one's art project is just gluing fish scales to speedos.
You see, you say that, you make a joke about that. But yesterday I was watching Euronews, and they had a guy who basically makes art from feathers that have fallen off birds.
That sure is something.
So I wouldn't put it beyond the bounds of possibility.
But also, where do they get the fish scales?
Well, they go out, catch mackerel, scale the fish, keep it all, and then sew it onto a pair of speedos.
It's just like Mr. Fish scraping his foot. This entire industry is horrifying.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But anyway, Rise of the Black Panther by Ta-Nehisi Coates. It's all right. I can't really say fairer than that. It feels incomplete to me. It feels rushed to me. Tutorial mode, as you said, Andy.
I guess it might be good to give to someone who wants to get into Black Panther.
I think
kind of just wants a quick primer on the continuity.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case with this. I think it's just, if you've never read Black Panther and if you are interested in, say, watching the film, and you want more of some more knowledge about Black Panther that maybe you can use to impress your girlfriend or something like that, right? Then you'd basically read this.
So now I'm just imagining that classic, like, Charles Atlas commercial. It's like some muscular guy. It's just like some other guy walks up to you and your girlfriend on the beach and just starts listing off Black Panther facts.
See, you say that, but given how big Marvel is now.
Maybe.
And don't forget, we already established that the geeks are basically in charge now. All the jocks are basically, you know, living vicariously. All the ones who didn't make it as athletes or footballers, I should say. You know, I used to be semi-pro people, as I call them. They're all
this month's Playgirl magazine.
Yeah, they're all remembered.
Joshua, he can name all of the Dora Milaje.
So, anyway, Andrew, over to you.
Yep, I have also been reading Rasputin, The Voice of the Dragon.
Ooh.
Which is by Mike Vignola and Chris Robertson, with art by Christopher Mitten and Dave Stewart.
See, this is the kind of comic that you really just want to put that Bonnie M song on, don't you?
Look, I'm not going to lie, it was basically on loop in my head every minute I was reading this. But yeah, this is interesting. This is a prequel to the first Hellboy story, Seed of Destruction.
Yeah.
Sort of showcasing Rasputin's rise to power and how he came to be working with the Nazis.
Ah.
And it follows Professor Trevor Broom as he tries to stop Rasputin from unearthing the secrets of the Helioptic Brotherhood of Ra.
Ooh.
Which kind of, I appreciate what he's doing, because one of the weird things about reading some of the very early Hellboy stuff is how different and kind of disconnected it seems from a lot of the later stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Because obviously you know, Mike Mignola was still finding his feet. And also, John Byrne co-wrote the first story, which is really weird, because it means Hellboy is like all these long, elaborate inner monologues.
Okay.
Also, quick tangent, John Byrne is possibly one of the worst people on the planet.
Why?
He is just super racist, misogynistic.
Ooh.
And also, there's a horrifying rumor that Marvel may have cancelled Chelsea Kane's Vision miniseries so that they can give it to him instead.
What?
And if they have, absolutely screw you, C.B. Cebulski. And just screw John Byrne in general.
Because he's
the worst.
If that turns out to be true, I will be writing a strongly worded letter to C.B. Cebulski, and I will tell him, you know, if I see his face...
Dear Mr. Yoshida, just scribbled out. Cebulski.
Yeah, I might start it like that.
But anyway, Mike Mignola is not the worst.
No, he isn't.
And neither Chris Robertson, Christopher Mitten, and Dave Stewart, who just, yeah, it's a fun little romp with some very nice art.
And a great theme tune.
Yes, and a great theme tune. Actually, because it's fun, because some of the characters it brings back, so Trevor Broom, he teams up with Sandu, who most people probably don't remember, but was one of the characters in Rise of the Black Flame.
Ah.
But one of the other pretty cool stories that I'd covered a while ago.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's cool, all the stuff that they're doing to kind of tie back into the larger Hellboy mythos.
Awesome.
Also, it means that, like, Cronin is back. That the weird Nazi science guy who's basically a spirit inside of... Look, I'm just going to say it. It's a steampunk gimp suit.
See, of all the things that you could have said, I didn't expect that.
But it is, because he's basically the weird ninja dude from the first Hellboy film.
Oh, him. Isn't he like Voldo from Soul Calibur?
Yeah, basically that, where like he doesn't have blood, he's just full of sand.
Yeah, he's basically Voldo.
But in the comics, it's like he's a Nazi scientist, so he also wears a lab coat.
Voldo in a lab coat is just... It's the weirdest image that I think I've had for a while.
Yeah, it's a fun little miniseries. I think the only thing is the endings seems kind of a little bit weak. I think, again, kind of like The Rise of Atriox, because it's basically just leading into a bigger story.
All right.
Like, you already know Trevor Broom, his mission is not going to, at least not going to entirely succeed, because he doesn't stop Rasputin. Because Rasputin goes on to summon Hellboy to Earth.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it is a little bit of an anticlimax. Apart from that, it's some good stuff.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. And you've got volume 2 of the short stories soon, haven't you?
I do indeed. Going to be sitting down to some of that.
So look forward to that, because, but anyway, something to look forward to for me. Well, do I look forward to it? I don't know. I honestly don't know what I think of this. Old Man Hawkeye, Volume 1, An Eye for an Eye. And this is by Ethan Sachs and Marco Cicchetto. And
this is the one that's like a prequel to Old Man Logan, isn't it?
It's kind of a prequel to Old Man Logan. Something has happened. Most of the heroes are dead. Red Skull is in charge of America. And they left Hawkeye alive because he didn't have any powers, so obviously he's no threat. You know.
Sidebar.
Yeah.
It's a really dumb plot point.
Yeah.
Like, but it's kind of a fun joke to say, oh, it's Hawkeye, he's the useless one. But like, he is also part of the Avengers. Like, he has stopped you numerous times, supervillains.
Yeah. And that's what I don't understand. This whole thing is set up on the basis that Hawkeye has no powers, and so they basically left him because obviously what's he gonna do by himself? Yada, yada, yeah, yada.
He's only one of the top superheroes in the world.
Yeah, he's only, like, the number one sharpshooter. Well, he was. Now he's got, I think it's a glaucoma or something like that, and his eyesight's failing, so he's missing from time to time. Lo and behold, he is escorting some goods across the desert, only to be attacked by the Maddox boys. You remember Multiple Man?
Okay.
But for some reason, they all seem to be fans of Thor, because they're wearing a Thor-type top, and, you know...
Oh, no, that's part of Multiple Man's outfit, the weird, like, yellow dots.
Yeah, it reminded me of Thor for some reason. But anyway, so Clint kills a bunch of them by shooting them in the eye, the throat, the head, things like that. And it was nice to see some actual violence being done with a bow and arrow in the proper way. But one of them, he misses, and that one runs away. He's going, run away, run away. And so Clint, when he misses, he has to go see his doctor, who is who used to be dating Luke Cage back in the day when Luke Cage was sporting his metal headband and his wing-collared yellow shirt.
Oh, it's Claire Temple off of the TV shows.
Yep, it's Claire Temple. This was
Rosario Dawson.
Yeah, this was back in the day when Luke Cage looked like a damn fool, as he says in the TV show.
And, I feel like you can get away with saying that better than I can.
That was my bad version of... that was me badly impersonating... what's his name?
Mike Calder.
Yeah, Mike Calder. So anyway, Hawkeye goes to Logan, who's digging on his farm, and says, look, you know what they did, I want revenge, yada, yada, yada. Then he goes to see his ex-wife, to see his daughter, who his estranged daughter. And Hawkeye's basically decided he basically wants revenge. He wants to prove that he's still worth something, and nobody else seems to give a damn. Except for the escaped Maddox boy, who has found a pool of water that he's going to drink from, only to find that the pool of water isn't a pool of water. The pool of water is actually a venom. And because he's a multiple man, he can turn into an army of venoms. All of whom...
I guess that tracks, because he can multiply clothes.
Yeah. All of whom are out to kill Hawkeye, because Hawkeye killed his brothers. Not only that, the sheriff comes to town. The sheriff, who works directly for the Red Skull and has a red crystal instead of an eye. The sheriff who later does something gruesome to Mysterio, which I'm not going to tell you about, but it is kind of amazing at the same time. The sheriff known as Bullseye.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So, Clint...
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense as a Hawkeye villain. They're both accurate boys.
Yeah. Clint goes after Mysterio because he wants to find the location of certain people. The people who he's trying to find the location of are the Thunderbolts. Now, the Thunderbolts, for those of you who are familiar with Marvel Comics, sometimes they've been good guys. Generally, they've been bad guys, though, haven't they?
Yeah, they started off as a group of villains who basically started impersonating the heroes after the Avengers disappeared for a while.
Yeah.
But then they decided they actually liked being heroes, so they went straight. And sometimes they've been like that. Sometimes they've basically been the Marvel version of the Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
I dig them.
See, this is the thing. Apparently, the whole thing that happened with all the heroes happened because the Thunderbolts betrayed Clint. He brought them on board, telling everybody that they could trust them, and the Thunderbolts betrayed them. And so Hawkeye, wanting revenge now, is going around killing Thunderbolts. And... It's a weird situation because eventually he goes, you know, eventually he does meet certain characters. He meets the legacy of certain characters. And this is all kind of queuing up for what happens in Old Man Logan, you know. You know it's all queuing up to what happens in Old Man Logan. But I honestly don't know whether I like this or not. I think I need to read more of it so I can actually judge properly. Because up to now, it's been interesting. A lot more interesting than Old Man Logan, I'll be honest. I like Old Man Hawkeye as a character because, mainly because he doesn't have powers. Does that make sense?
Yeah, he's just like some old guy trying to get by on his wits and skills.
Yeah, whereas Old Man Logan always seemed kind of a, you know, Logan has been an old man for a long time. So it was just kind of, we'll take Logan, we'll make him a bit more grizzled and give him grey hair. But essentially,
yeah, he's basically just grey hair, Logan.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's like he hasn't used enough Grecian 2000 or whatever hair dye he uses. That's literally what Old Man Logan is. Whereas Old Man Hawkeye actually feels like Clint Barton has aged. You know, it actually feels like he's now so far over the hill, he's on the bottom of the other side. But there's something that he wants to do, and nobody seems to give a damn whether he does it or not. Does that make sense?
I mean, this sounds basically more like Unforgiven than Old Man Logan is.
Yes, it is a lot.
The whole point was that was that was basically just an Unforgiven ripoff.
Yeah, this sounds a lot... This actually... I was trying to think, what does this remind me of all the way through? And you just hit the nail on the head. It is basically Unforgiven. It's basically Hawkeye can't forgive himself for what happened because he sees it as him causing it all in the first place.
Yeah, and it's kind of that sense of, well, I might not want to, but I am now duty-bound to go to vengeance.
Well, I think he's looking at it from the perspective of his eyesight's going. He will go blind at some point. And
and this is his last shot.
Quite literally, yeah.
I know the pun I made.
I know, that's why I didn't pay attention to it. I thought it was a good one. I wasn't drawing attention to it because I thought it was good. But yeah, Old Man Hawkeye, it is better than Old Man Logan, I'll be honest. And I am going to read more of it because I think I need to read more. I think so far it's been very good. I love Bullseye as a character. He is completely out there. He's completely
I do like a good, just completely off the rails Bullseye.
Well, let's put it this way, right? Mysterio, right? Giant eyeball head. Hang on, is Giant Eyeball Head Mysterio or is Giant Eyeball someone else? And it's not Mysterio. That's
the Orb, isn't it? Who's got eye for a face.
Yeah, that's him. The Orb, sorry, not Mysterio. I get confused between the two.
Yeah, no, Mysterio is like fishbowl helmet.
Yeah, that's it. The Orb. Well, the Orb has a Watcher's eye in his chest, doesn't he?
He does.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't give Bullseye the kind of help that Bullseye needs. Bullseye in this is an absolute monster, by the way.
Yeah, which I think is just the best Bullseye.
Yeah, when he doesn't care, because Bullseye is an old man as well. He's seen pretty much everything. He's seen the worst that people do to each other, and he knows, doesn't matter what he does, still not a patch on what that quiet guy who lives down the road from you is going to do.
How come Old Man Logan doesn't have hot claws?
Exactly. But yeah,
that's the real question.
I'll tell you what, the artwork in this is really good as well. The panels are really good. The artwork is really good, and there's a visceral nature to it that really hits home. It's kind of Unforgiven meets Mad Max meets the Marvel Universe,
aka basically delivering on the promise that Old Man Logan made.
Yes, and I think it works better with Old Man Hawkeye because Hawkeye is basically more like Mad Max than Logan was.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
So anyway, your turn. Are we done?
No, we're done.
Oh, right.
That's the end of the show. Also, I like how independently of each other, we've managed to do nothing but prequel comics.
Yes, I know. It's really weird. And I like how, for both of us as well, the two comics that we had that have Rise in the title
are the ones we don't like as much.
Exactly. Weird how things work out, isn't it?
It is. That's some good strange synergy.
Yeah. I have to say, Marvel's fascination with Old Man Whatever. I'm just waiting for the Old Man She-Hulk.
Oh no.
I've thrown it out there, you know it's going to happen.
I don't feel like you've forgotten some of the plot of Old Man Logan there.
Oh, you just reminded me.
Mark Miller!
You've literally just reminded me. Thank you for...
And that's it. That's kind of like the sitcom.
Yeah. On that note, we are at the end of the show. What's your favourite video game adaptation of a comic book or your favourite comic book that's based on a video game? Let us know in the comments.
Hit us up on Twitter and ask it at 4PanelPodcast.
Yes, what Andrew said. You can, if you head over to our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, you'll find all sorts of other stuff on there, from Cinema Eclectica, where they talk about films and stuff, to Keyframe, where we talk about animation and all that good stuff. So check it out. Anyway, until next time on 4Panel, I've been Rob.
And I've been Andrew.
And we'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.